This week, the ESVS e-platform publishes a new chapter of the Virtual Vascular Textbook. The title is Abdominal Compartment Syndrome, and the author, Martin Björk. He is a professor of vascular surgery in Uppsala, Sweden, and one of the three editors of Virtual Vascular. Martin, why write a chapter on abdominal compartment syndrome?
It so happens that I've been working with abdominal compartment syndrome, or ACS as we abbreviate it, for more than 30 years. I trained as a general surgeon in the 1970s. In those days, no one even considered leaving the abdomen open. I spent some years as a wartime surgeon in Angola, Africa, and in the late 1980s, when I trained to become a vascular surgeon, we had an epidemic of colonic ischemia after aortic surgery. We hadn't seen that before, not as often, and we thought it had to do with the way the anesthetists treated our patients. They had started to practice the so-called supranormal resuscitation, which was a la mode at the time.
Supranormal resuscitation? What is that?
It was a stupid idea, based on low-quality research. Poor research has killed many patients. There was an American intensivist called Shoemaker who described that intensive care patients, in which he could increase cardiac output by 50%, survived more often. That was a false conclusion explained by confounding. The fact that they survived more often was not a cause effect of the treatment, but an effect of the fact that less critically ill patients are able to react to volume and inotropic support, whereas the most severely ill will not react. Later research actually showed that this practice was even dangerous. It killed thousands of
people. But what does that have to do with abdominal compartment syndrome?
Giving the patient too much fluid results in an increased risk of ACS. A talented Hungarian intensivist called Zoltán Balog, studying trauma patients in Houston, Texas, showed very beautifully that the amount of crystalloids given was an independent risk factor for ACS. That was how my interest for ACS was evoked. I started to measure interabdominal pressure after aortic surgery, as well as perfusion of the sigmoid colon and stomach by tonometry. That was the focus of my PhD thesis.
Tell us more about the chapter.
After a summary and introduction, I first described the pathophysiology, how the increased interabdominal pressure affects the kidneys, lungs, and cardiovascular system. Furthermore, how ACS is defined and how to measure interabdominal pressure. Then comes epidemiology, which kind of patients are affected.
And who are those at risk?
Well, the most important situation to consider and when it is important to prevent ACS is after surgery for abdominal aortic aneurysm, in particular if the patient has rupture or if there is a major bleeding during elective surgery. But trauma patients with major bleeding, patients with aortic dissection or with intestinal ischemia are also at risk.
How do you treat ACS then?
Prevention is always better, and in fact, there are many things you can do to reduce the risk of developing ACS. Permissive hypertension is important. The first thing I do when I enter a room at the emergency department with a patient suspected of having a ruptured AAA is to turn off the drip or the drips. They often have two. It's also important to have a massive transfusion protocol, but when ACS already has developed, decompressive laparotomy is necessary, and it's often life-saving. Surgery is dedication to detail, so there are quite a few tips and tricks how to perform the decompressive laparotomy and how to manage the patient with an open abdomen. This is a kind of race against time. If you do not manage to close the abdomen within 2 weeks, the risk of severe complications starts to increase rapidly. You need to be proactive in order to save the patient. Recognition of the ACS is actually one of the most important steps that we have taken during the last 30 years to improve survival after ruptured AAA and in other situations with great blood loss and resuscitation. It is just as serious a complication after endovascular as after open surgery. So the problem is not solved by endovascular solutions.
Thank you, Martin.
My pleasure.
We encourage everyone to read this new and important chapter of a virtual vascular textbook. We hope you enjoy it and learn from it. Please remember that virtual vascular is an interactive educational tool. We look forward to your feedback. We will update the chapters regularly, so your questions and suggestions are most welcome.